Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently. Today's episode is in partnership with Lawyers In-House. Lawyers In-House is comprised of a team of experienced former in-house counsel who are ready to hit the ground running to deliver world-class legal support that takes work off your plate and makes life easier along the way. Whether you're a solopreneur or a Fortune 500 company or fall anywhere in between, Lawyers In-House will meet and exceed your business's needs.
Today, we are joined by Christine Holmes. Christine is the founder and CEO of lawyersinhouse.com. With diverse legal and business experience, Christine founded lawyersinhouse.com on the principle of making legal services more accessible and the legal industry more diverse and inclusive. Her specialties include general commercial law, IT, privacy, advertising, employment, leasing, and working within regulatory environments. She has provided legal services to a broad range of clients, from senior executives and in-house counsel of large national and multinational corporations to small businesses and startups. Christine is passionate about changing the legal industry for the better for both her clients and her team. We have been dreaming up this in-house series since we started Off the Tracks, and we are so grateful to have partnered with Christine and her team to bring this series to life.
So as Erin was saying, we are so thrilled to be sitting down with Christine. We have been so excited for this, and we are just so ready to dive into this conversation. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Piper and Erin. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my goodness. So Christine, we obviously have had the opportunity to speak with you before, but we would be so grateful if you could tell everyone tuning in a little bit about your career to date and how it's evolved over time.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. I started in private practice, as most people do. I started at a smaller to mid-sized firm in Toronto. It was hard for me because I had kids while I was at law school. I had one when I got there, and I literally had one between first and second year. I remember terrifying my torts professor when I walked in September and Isaiah was due in October. And he was like, yeah, you don't need to come to class. I think he was worried I was going to have it in torts. But So I immediately knew I couldn't go to Bay Street. I couldn't do, that much. I just couldn't sacrifice that much time and have that much uncertainty on my time. And so chose a smaller to mid-sized firm and articled there, was an associate there. But not too long after, a few years, really enjoyed the clients that I working at, really enjoyed business, and went in-house. And I went in-house at Cineplex Entertainment. They were one of my biggest clients that I'd worked on. I was lucky enough that they were a client that I worked on while I was still articling. Really great team of people. I'm still in touch with lots of them today. Super fun place, plus free movies. So doesn't really get better than that. And then after a few years there, I was actually headhunted to Pepsi, and they wooed me. I was still a pretty young lawyer, and they flew me down to New York, and a driver picked me up and drove me into the PepsiCo campus. And it was pretty exciting. But as everyone knows, there's a myth that in-house life is easy and it's a better work-life balance. And I can tell you it's not at Cineplex and it wasn't at Pepsi. And I just really wanted to find that. And I have, I've got kids and my youngest has special needs. So it was really searching for that, always searching for that. So after several years at Pepsi, we actually made a move out of the city, changed lifestyle completely, moved up to Muskoka full-time. And so then I started thinking, okay, now what do I do? I didn't want to hang up a shingle and do residential real estate. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that just wasn't what really gave me passion. So started doing, and it was actually other lawyers who gave me the idea of working. They're saying, oh, you've got to network with your experience, start working with other in-house departments and in-house teams. So started doing that in what any other profession would call a consultant. But our profession doesn't use that word, at least not in a positive manner. And just started doing project work, and then realized I was making, great money for the work that I was doing. I was doing great work, working with amazing companies and great people, mostly at home in my, you know, yoga pants and taking the kids to school, picking them up, never missing basketball games or any kind of sporting event or club that they were in. And I just felt like I had this great balance. So I felt like I had finally achieved it. However, as I looked around at the rest of the profession and my colleagues, I didn't really see anybody else feeling that way. And some of the issues that I have felt and noticed and witnessed in the profession, I haven't really seen a lot of movement on in my 20 years. So that sort of propelled me from taking the way I was working and trying to create a company and a space for more than just me in the profession. And that's when almost 4 years ago, I started Lawyers in House.
That is amazing. And we were just talking about perks of having people on the podcast who work for cool companies and what the perks must be. And I have to say, free movies would be a highlight in this household, because as Piper knows, that is like our go-to midweek escape. We love going to the movies, and my family loves Pepsi, so I'm sure they came with some awesome perks. But absolutely, you know, perks can only go so far. Free movies can only go so far before you're completely exhausted and burnt out.
I mean, for me, if there was free popcorn, like that would be the draw for me. But, you know, we all are motivated by different things. Some people are motivated by movies. Some people are motivated by popcorn. Others are motivated by money. So, you know, it really depends what you're after.
Well, and Piper, it's funny you said that. I'm a huge fan of Ellis Jacob, who's the president of Cineplex. He's just a brilliant man, a kind man, and is such a smart entrepreneur. And I used to say, Ellis, like, you know, because I'd take the kids and I'd say, can I please have free concessions? I will pay for the movies. It costs me way more in pop and candy and popcorn than it does for the movie ticket. And he'd just lean into me and say, Christine, we don't share the concession profit with Hollywood. So I'd be like, okay. And that was it. That's why there's so no free funny concessions at Cineplex.
Damn, that's how they get you. Oh, that's too funny. So, Christine, we know you've had a few different in-house experiences, but what do you enjoy most about working in-house, and how has your experience varied working with the different companies and now with your own?
I probably love everything about in-house except for the lower pay. I always say that's the only thing you can be guaranteed at an in-house role. But really, it's so to me, it was the diversity and being surrounded by business people, and some companies having lawyers and some companies maybe having a couple of lawyers. And I know there's lots of in-house counsel out there that they are the entire department, just them. But I found it really exciting to get involved in all of the different facets of the business. And I was mostly a commercial real estate and leasing lawyer when I started at Cineplex, but they just hear lawyer. Right. So the marketing department comes up to you and you're like, oh, what do you think of this mock-up of an ad? And HR comes in and is like, oh, we're terminating someone. Can you review the package? And you're like, wow, you know, I was a pretty young lawyer and it was like time to take some CLEs and do a lot of research. But it really is that diversity. I loved being at the table and you're there with all the different facets, you know, finance, IT, HR, marketing, whoever it might be, operations, logistics, distribution, and they're all really smart people. And you get an understanding of, you know, I may be smart, I may have a certain amount of knowledge and training that is valuable, but I'm one piece of the puzzle. And there's so many people that come with different viewpoints and different backgrounds, and having all of that together and seeing them all as valuable is what really, I think, makes a business thrive. So that was probably my favorite part. I still have a fondness for commercial leasing, but doing nothing but that every day, day in and day out, and not seeing the results, not seeing the theaters built, not going to the theater openings, not really understanding that the bigger picture and all of it wasn't as appealing to me. I'd also say, I think it's really fun not being surrounded by like nothing but lawyers. I mean that with all due respect to our profession. And I think it's a great question that you asked the difference between Cineplex and Pepsi, because every company is different. And I would encourage every in-house counsel to remember that. So if things aren't going well where you are, it's not quite what you imagined, doesn't necessarily mean in-house isn't for you. It might mean where you are isn't for you. Cineplex is extremely entrepreneurial, very, very busy. You worked on cutting edge things. I worked on the Scene program. And so it's super interesting. That's how old I am. And it's super interesting now, you know, people are like, oh, do you have a Scene card? You know, when you're shopping, wherever. And I remember that was the very first time a bank in Canada had been involved in a loyalty program. So it was a big, big thing. And, you know, and back then privacy was like a pretty new thing. What? We got to, you know, keep things private. So you really were on like cutting edge, cool stuff. And that was sort of Cineplex in a nutshell, that and the free movies. And then Pepsi was, and Cineplex being such a strong, amazing Canadian brand, you know, from coast to coast. I was so proud. I'd say coast to coast to coast, but when I was there, they didn't have anything in the north. I don't know if they do now. But Pepsi was very different in lots of ways, but also in really interesting and dynamic ways. So you went from this great Canadian brand to this like monolithic global brand that basically everybody globally knows. You had a Fortune 100 company, and it was really interesting, exciting. And I rolled up to, there was, when I was at the entity that I was at here, it was the bottling group. They used to be separated in that day, the bottling group from PepsiCo, which was the sort of more marketing arm. So I rolled up into, from a legal team perspective, New York, into the global team. And it was an amazing general counsel. And that team was, so I went from this nimble sort of team of two at Cineplex to this established team in New York that, even though they were in New York, obviously a different jurisdiction, really knowledgeable, really kind, really generous people with their time. And it was like, you know, if I had HR questions, obviously the law is different, but what's the PepsiCo way? What are the PepsiCo precedents? And it was the same across the line in every division, you know, sales, IT, distribution, whichever area. I had support, you know, from the team, and you were part of global legal conferences. So, you know, I'd fly to Napa and you know, you'd listen to all the latest global trends. It sounds so great. Like you're, oh, wow. Like you're going to go to Napa and it's like, but then do you really want to be there with like lawyers from around the world at Pepsi? Like that wasn't my dream Napa vacation, but it was really interesting. So it was just a whole different level. So it was more putting best practices in place. It was more collaborative. It was more working with different jurisdictions globally. So it wasn't that, you know, you came up with something or you worked on something and saw it implemented, as to you really got a bigger picture of a large establishment and how it works. And they were both equally exciting and interesting. Wow. And then now this.
that's what I was getting to. So okay, you've taken all of these experiences at the national and global level, and then you created your own thing. And so we would love to hear, you know, we've obviously shared at the start of this episode what Lawyers in House is. And we'd love to hear if you could share in your own words, like what the vision behind starting Lawyers in House was and how you view Lawyers in House as fulfilling a need in the legal market.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say it was started out of like frustration. I just feel as a profession, we can do better. And I felt as in-house counsel, I felt there wasn't as much community. It's growing all of the time, but there wasn't as many connections. Everyone's so busy. Work-life balance is hard enough as it is. And I found so many CLEs and the focus of so many of the legal associations or even the provincial bar associations were dominated by private practice members, private practice issues, because they are the majority of the profession. So I do understand that. But I just felt that there was a bigger need and a need greater than even traditional organizations like CCCA, which are working really hard to fill those needs. But it's only so much. So I saw a gap that way in the community to talk about in-house topics, to talk about in-house issues that are specific. And private practice can't do that because they don't know them. So it's not a lack of concern or a lack. It's just plain a lack of knowledge and, you know, an understanding of what the issues are. So I really felt that there was a gap there. But I've always felt that there... Law is a tough profession, in my opinion, and it comes with a lot of responsibility and it comes with a lot of pressure. But I find that our industry has built in additional pressures. You know, when you look at the outrageous billable targets or the partner track or whatever it might be, the amount of stress that's piled on an already difficult profession. And I just always felt like there must be an easier way to do this. Why does being a lawyer have to be so hard? You know, why can't it be a little bit more fun and enjoyable and you feel you can have a more balanced life? So sort of these pieces, and then along with one of the biggest, which is the core part of our mission and values at Lawyers in House, is inclusion and equality. And I have been practicing for about 20 years, and I really have not seen the needle move on that. And I think there's a lot of systemic issues because there was lots and lots of diversity when I was in law school. And I think the statistic, if I'm not mistaken, is for 27 years now in Canada, there's been more women graduate from law school than men. So if you look at that for 27 years, when you look at the senior equity partner level across Canada, when you look at the general councils, they shouldn't look like they do. And we all know that there's a drain. We all know that people leave, and we all know that it's certain criteria or qualities of people that are leaving. And I just haven't seen enough change of that in our profession. So I thought maybe there'd be something I could do about that and try to create a space that was more inclusive, that was more balanced, that was more flexible and collaborative instead of competitive. So that was sort of the main motivations, I'd say.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. It's so great to hear how you've been so innovative and been able to grow your team and do all this in such a relatively short period of time. And one thing I know that you guys do really well is have a remote work, but still have a team feeling. How do you make remote work for your team? And what would you say to those who say you have to be in an office for XYZ reason? And selfishly, I am asking this question because Christine and I did have a lovely discussion about this exact issue back in the summer when it was much nicer outside and over delicious pasta. So we would just love for you to share your perspective on this because I really enjoyed learning a bit more about that.
Well, thank you, Erin. I appreciate that. And I think it's a really important question right now because I'm seeing, as I'm sure a lot of the in-house community is, I'm seeing so many companies already going back to hybrid. And then, you know, it's creeping to 2 days a week. It's creeping to three. Three's creeping to four. And I am a little bit worried, my thoughts on human nature and the profession combined, that we're going to forget. That we're going to forget that through COVID, everybody was remote and that productivity did not decrease. In fact, it increased. And we're going to forget that it works for a lot of people, especially women, especially parents, especially people who are caregivers or people with disabilities. So I'm afraid we're going to forget that. But as far as creating the team feeling, it isn't easy by any means. You have to purposefully and actively do it. So we try to do things like you know, lunch and learns where we're doing substantive talks, happy hours. And we do do in-person events because I think it is different. And we try to go out and, you know, different members of the team and meet in person when we can. And like Erin and I, who are, you know, not exactly side by side, even provincially, let alone our cities, but it's, you know, she was close in the summer. So it's like, let's sit down and have that conversation. It is great to meet in person at times when you can. But it's just for me, what I have seen is the productivity in work, but also the change in work-life balance, and therefore the happier the individual is. So, and you, I don't think you can minimize that. I know, especially for lawyers, can sound very fluffy to talk about, oh, we want a happy team. And, but it really does make a difference, and it makes a difference in client service as well. So I think it's something that it isn't easy to achieve, but I think it's really important, and it can work really well. And so many people, you know, you go, you throw in the load of laundry, or you, you know, put something on to marinate, or you take something out of the freezer, then you hop on your call and you're working. So I have never seen in my 4 years, as I said, that we're coming up to, people who've worked less or who take advantage of it. But I do think a lot of people really value it, and it makes them actually a more committed worker. That has been my experience with it.
Oh, Christine, I have so much to say about this topic, but I think that you've summed it up so succinctly. And so I really appreciate that you come at it from both like a human, but also a business perspective as well. Obviously you come at it as a parent but you also come at it as an entrepreneur. And so you really like, you see the value on both sides. And I think that that is so beneficial. I feel that this topic has become strangely so divisive, and it can be very emotional for people. And I don't mean emotional in like with any negative connotation, but just in the sense that it truly does bring up a lot of emotion. And I mean, I feel that way as well. Everything you've said really resonates with me personally. And so we really appreciate you sharing that perspective, because it's not a perspective shared by everyone. And you've proven that it really works for you, and you're a very successful and consistently growing team. And we really appreciate that insight. I think that as a leader and an entrepreneur, you really paved the way in so many, you know, creative ways. And you've done that by building Lawyers in House, which is your own thing. You started something out of thin air. You had this idea and you've grown it into this magnificent like practice. And
you guys are good for my ego. Wow. Thank you. Can I come on next week too?
Of course. But don't worry, Christine, we're about to bring your ego down a second, because
Okay, good.
The next question we have for you is, you know, you've talked about these transitions, like from Cineplex, and then you were wooed to go to Pepsi, and then, you know, you left and you started Lawyers in House, but we'd love to learn a little bit about, were there any bumps along the way? Did you face any setbacks throughout your career? And if so, what did you learn from that?
Oh my God. Any bumps? several.
Well, I guess not getting the free concessions was a bit of a bump. So yeah.
Oh, my kids cried when I left Cineplex. They were like, because we'd also get like free movie swag, and yeah, it's not the same. Free pop doesn't measure up, but that's not a knock on Pepsi, great company. But no, and that's one of the things, and I congratulate, if I can just take a minute, both of you, you know, as, I mean, you're much younger than me and newer in the profession, but you're both so smart and perceptive and looking at the profession already. And how can you improve it? How can we really make it our own and what we want it to be? And by highlighting all these people's different stories to say there's all these different ways, these voices are so important. It's so important out there, because I feel when people start law school, we come from different backgrounds and different perspectives and different levels of knowledge about the law. I'm not from Toronto. I'm not the fifth generation, you know, lawyer in my family. I didn't know what the Seven Sisters were, but I, 4 in my case, because I took an extra year after having Isaiah, was, this was all I heard. This was the one place to go. This is where I should, this is where the smartest people go. This is where you're going to be able to pay off your student loans. You know, this is where everyone should want to go. And there was no other voice. So when I was there, there was no one else saying, and I get it, in-house departments don't have the time and the budget and the resources to be sending people to law schools. Government, same. And small firms are the same. So I just felt like there wasn't a lot of voices, a lot of differing voices. And then for me, I was not an ideal candidate for Bay Street. They wouldn't have wanted me had I've applied. You know, oh, hi, I'm a, and at that point, I was a single mom. I'm a single mom when, I'm, you know, my youngest has special needs. Like, I would never have gotten an interview. You know, that's not what they were looking for. And yet I say that as Canadian born, white, English speaking, heterosexual. I mean, there's all sorts of things that I tick that I realize I'm privileged that those weren't issues, but still it wasn't enough. You know, they would not have wanted a single parent as an articling student. So I felt right there, you know, even if I wanted to go there and pay off my student loans, which it wouldn't have worked for my kids and my balance anyway, work-life balance, I felt that there was a barrier there to me. And again, that's a big part of my passion, because I know there's other people who felt barriers because of one of those things that was readily visible, you know, disabilities that people would see, or the color of their skin or their accent or whatever it might have been, that felt barriers as well. So definitely that. And then again, just trying to balance life, trying to balance, even when I went to a small to mid-sized firm, all sorts of discrimination. And it is amazing. And Erin, I think I shared this with you earlier, was how one of the senior partners there, his nickname for me was Little Girl. And the worst part of it is I wasn't even offended. And at this point, I think I was 28, 29. I had kids. I was separated. I'd been married. I was separated. That's what I always say. You get married young, you get divorced young. Keep that in mind. But that's literally what he called me. Like, he didn't say my name. So you face that. And I grew up in corporate Canada and law firms way before Me Too. And I could name people in incidents, and as could every woman that I worked with. So they're difficult things. They're not just stories. They make it hard for you to be in some places. And I know they're the reasons that some people leave some organizations. So I know those aren't specific to me, but I think they're important bumps to acknowledge. And then for me, it really was the balance. I feel like I spent, you know, the first 17 years of my life trying to figure out, how am I a parent and how am I a lawyer? And people used to always ask me, how do you do both? And I just say, well, I do a really poor job in both of them. And that's how I get by. And I hope that wasn't true, but it's how you felt. Like, I just felt like there wasn't enough hours of the day. But there was always other people that, and by that, I mean, even just one or two other people that were inspiring, or that I had seen had overcome, or that understood where I had been. I always give a shout out to Sulin Noel, the general counsel at Purelater. She was a first year associate when I came into the firm, and she was a single mom, and she has biracial kids and I have biracial kids. So for me, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, someone that can do this. And, you know, she came from Saskatchewan, and here she is in Toronto. And I mean, she has just an incredible story. So there's always those people that you can look to that have overcome so much and can be inspirational. And if you don't have them in your life, reach out to them. You try to find them, you know, either, you know, reach out through organizations, or if you find someone's profile on LinkedIn that you like, just reach out and connect. Because I do find, despite all of our sort of stereotypical things you hear about our profession, I find that lawyers are very generous when you connect with them on a personal level. And so make those connections, and whatever bumps you're hitting, I feel like they can give you some guidance and inspiration, and just keep going. And just remember, it's a bump, and it might be a person, it might be a place, it might be the culture, it might be a life event you're experiencing, but you just have to keep pushing through. Because I find sometimes when you get over the bump or through the barrier, there's always something really amazing on the other side.
That is a really great reminder. Thank you, Christine. And sort of touching on that, how do you take care of your mental health? And, you know, when you're in the thick of it, when you're in the middle of the bump and it feels like there's no other side of that little hump, how do you get through that? What advice would you have for others?
I would say when you're right in it, just like literally task by task, like not even day by day, because sometimes when you're right in the middle, a whole day can seem daunting. You know, your eyes open up in the morning and you can be like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this day. And so I would just say literally task by task, even if it's something little. And I've had that, you know, as an entrepreneur, those overwhelming feelings. And one thing that I had to do and change, my phone would be just like everyone tells you not to, right beside me. It's my alarm clock. Soon as I wake up. And then, so what do? You look at your messages and boom, you're in it. You are in it. It doesn't even matter if you've read your messages. So I found for my mental health, I had to not look at my phone. And it was like, I need to get up. I need to, and I know that sounds silly, but even just that, just get up and like make your bed, like have breakfast, wash your face, like literally take it task by task. And it's like, okay, I have a meeting. Okay. Let's just get through the meeting. And then you get through the meeting. And then I know for me in those really rocky times, once you get task orientated and you get a couple under your belt in the day, then you kind of get into your groove and then you get through your day. And then you're at the end of the day and you're like, I did it. You know, I'm at the end of my day. And I would really encourage you in those times to set really small goal for yourself, really small goals. So things like, you know, whatever time you set, you're going to get up in the morning, don't hit snooze, get up when your alarm goes off. And think of it as it's like you've set an intention that that's what time you should get up. You did that probably the night before. Don't devalue your intention. Don't devalue yourself from the night before and commit to that and go, no, I said I should get up at this time, so I'm getting up at this time. And same with little things like working out. And I mean, working out, I'm using air quotes. I hate running. I've always hate running. People would say, do you run? And I say only if someone's chasing me. But I made this little commitment to myself because I didn't have great work-life balance to run for 5 minutes a day, as silly as that sounds. But who doesn't have 5 minutes? There's no one who can tell me I don't have 5 minutes in a day. So I thought I'm going to set a really small goal and I'm going to do it every single day, no matter what. And after about 6 months, I was like, you know what? I'm going to run for 10 minutes a day, and I don't miss a day. And I know it sounds so silly, and the people that do like triathlons and marathons are probably chuckling right now. And it's a big joke in my family. My kids are like, oh, you're a runner now, Mom. And I'm like, that's right. I run. I'm a runner. But it is amazing, just that fresh air, that movement. But it's a tiny commitment. And when I get bogged down and when I get stressed, I'm like, oh, I don't have time. And it's like, it's 10 minutes. I have 10 minutes. So I just think when you are in the thick of difficult things, to really just think small, nothing's too small, go task by task, work your way through it. Obviously sometimes you need other help, you know, from other people and support systems in your life. But then just general work-life balance, I think it's the same thing. It's you know, we don't all have time to take a week off for a spa getaway, but maybe we have 20 minutes between calls that we weren't expecting, you know, call wrap. So step outside, breathe some fresh air, go for a walk, read a book. Reading's a huge passion of mine and really helps me relax. I literally keep it beside my computer. And so I have a quick break. It's like, you know what? I'm going to breathe. I'm not going to go through emails. I'm just going to take this minute for myself and help myself recharge. So those are sort of the tips that I give. I mean, it's great. Make sure you take your vacation time. Make sure that you take time off when you can. And always ask yourself that when you're looking at your tasks for the day. I'm sure every single person listening, and for you both, Aaron and Piper, you have more tasks in a day than you have time. So really, truly ask yourself, like, what needs to be done today? And what needs to be done today by me? And I think that really helps from a work-life balance perspective. And if you're not very good at that, you think everything needs to be done by you and everything needs to be done today, then talk to a colleague and get their perspective on what needs to be done today and what needs to be done by you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Christine. It's funny. I remember when Aaron ran a half marathon in the fall of 2019. I've never been more in awe of anyone or anything in my life. I genuinely don't understand how she did that. But still so impressive to me to this day, Air. So Christine, the 5 and 10 minutes a day is still so impressive to me. My friend was in town visiting me at the time of this recording, about a month ago. And she really wanted to go to a workout class where it was like half strength, half running. And I mean, I'll run, not willingly. And I went to the class. And I went to the class and I thought to myself, I can't believe I made money for this. Like, it was enjoyable. I was with my friend, but I'm totally with you. But I think you're totally right. Like, however people choose to move their body or to like seek relaxation in like these healthy, productive ways is so great. Christine, in that part of our conversation, you were talking about like having goals and setting different goals and tasks. And so something that I'm curious about is, you know, you've had this really wonderful and like rich career so far that you've, you know, paved yourself and made decisions to best benefit you and your family and your goals moving forward. And is there anything that you feel is unfinished? Like, is there anything that you're like, I still want to do this. I still want to get this done. This is so important to me to accomplish. And maybe, you know, you don't have an answer for that today, but it's just something I was curious about.
Well, I think you and Aaron have a much rosier picture of my success than I do. So yes, I feel like there's still a lot that I need to accomplish and I'm still working on. And that is the goal of Lawyers in House. And there's so many times, and any entrepreneur, including yourselves, will I'm sure relate to this, that there's times where you're thinking, what was I thinking? And why am I doing this? And this is so overwhelming with, you know, no guaranteed or set paycheck at the end. And it's like, but when you're passionate, and you believe in it. So those times where I'm like, why don't I just go back to doing legal work instead of trying to run a company as a lawyer? And it's like, no, because I believe there needs to be a space that isn't just about an alternative way to practice law, as important as that is, but is actually talking about in-house issues, is actually talking about inclusion, is actually talking about equality and how we need to move the needle on that. And I really feel strongly about that. I feel it as for a place of work. I feel we need to do a little bit better from a client and customer service standpoint. I think sometimes as lawyers, we forget that. In-house lawyers, I think, are more focused on that. Because you have to be, right? You can be that, you know, there's always in that firm, like that real jerk, but like, it's like, oh, well, he brings in money. Nobody cares. Those don't really survive in house, right? If like you're somebody that nobody likes, you get fired. Like that's how it works in a company. But so I think we, you know, we always need to be focused on customer service as a profession. And I would just like to stick around enough to do what I can to help improve the profession as a whole. As I said, you know, I'd love to figure out how do we get more voices in law school? Because as I said, to my knowledge, it's a diverse population. What are the barriers that are keeping that diverse population from rising to the top? And what do we all need to do to take away those barriers? And I think there's a lot of as the kids say, wokenism, which is, hey, I guess a start, but I'm not looking for a committee and I'm not looking for a LinkedIn post. I'm looking for what can we do to really make significant changes in, I mean, it needs to be changed in every profession, but I think when you start, you know, in your own house, in your own backyard, that's where the changes start. So that's what I'm really passionate about and want to do. And we have lawyers across Canada and in the US, and I have UK and two EU lawyers, because this isn't a Canadian problem, right? This is a global problem. And I just really like to make an impact on the profession.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Christine. We have so enjoyed kicking off this in-house series with you. We are so excited to hear from other in-house lawyers later on in this series. But we love to end the podcast with the same question, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
The one thing that I have learned recently is, and probably for a while now, but it stands out more and more every day as I get older, is how much more I have to learn. I find every day that there's so many things I don't know about and don't know enough about, which is kind of exciting when you think about it.
Christine, that is so profound. And I think it's such a great example of why we ask this question, which is because we really do believe that we're all always learning and evolving and seeking out like new ideas and insights to help us all as individuals and as like a collective community in the law in so many different ways, grow and like support each other. So thank you so much for sharing that, Christine. And thank you for being with us. This has been such a treat. Because of you, we get to share this series with the world. And we are so excited, as Erin was saying, to share your story and your perspectives in this episode and the future episodes, the next 7 episodes with other in-house practitioners. We cannot wait. And we can't thank you enough for being here and sharing all of your goodness with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you both so much. It's our pleasure to support. I think it's a fantastic podcast that you've both created. Congratulations to you. And we love that you're shining the light on the in-house community. So we're just thrilled to be a part of it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again to our partner, Lawyers in House, a law firm composed of former in-house counsel. To learn more, visit lawyersinhouse.com. to see how they can provide insightful, pragmatic, and solutions-focused legal services to you and your legal department.